Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. One of the men who has taken uncommon intelligence and brought it to bear in a manner that has been not only extraordinarily effective in educating untold millions of people about the sorts of things that we should be concerned about, and we certainly are here at Secure Freedom Radio, but he's actually done it with great profitability, I have to say, is our first guest. He is Joel Rosenberg. He is the author of, I've completely lost count, it must be 100 books.
That's not, each and every, not quite.
But each and every one of which...
But it's almost 5 million in print now, Frank.
Five million.
So people are responding to this stuff.
Responding.
Who knew?
Responding in several ways, I think, and that's what I kind of want to get into with you, Joel, is the effect that you have had in informing, yes, but also shaping the public consciousness of some of the really important and, frankly, frightening topics of our time. I'm delighted to have you with us. Joel is, among other things, the founder and chairman of the Joshua Fund, a nonprofit, educational, and charitable organization that he and his wife launched in 2006 for the purposes of mobilizing Christians with respect to Israel.
And her neighbor, who work in not just Israel, but among the Palestinians and in five Arab countries that surround Israel.
Well, you have your work cut out for you.
Absolutely. It's become genocidal conditions since we we didn't know that was coming, but I'm grateful that God set into motion an opportunity to educate, mobilize Christians, because he knew great evil was being unleashed, as it has been in other parts of the world, as
well,
you know.
And this is something we'll talk to in a moment. We're going to do, I'm happy to say, two segments with Joel, but I did want to start by showcasing your newest book. It's entitled The Kremlin Conspiracy. It is one of your novels. Tell us a little bit about the book. You have Russian lineage.
I do.
And I know this touches you in a lot of different ways. Tell us what moved you to write it.
Sure, Frank. Well, it's great to be with you and to see you again face to face. We've done this often on phone, but this is nice. So The Kremlin Conspiracy is a completely new political thriller, new characters. I've spent 16 of the 17 years I've been writing novels focused almost entirely on the Middle East and the threat of radical Islamism to the United States, to the Western Alliance, to Israel, to our Arab allies also. And actually, the last series was about the Islamic State capturing chemical weapons in Syria and planning genocidal attacks.
I know.
Well, I began writing it before most people had even heard of ISIS. And I will just note, just before we get to the Kremlin conspiracy, that King Abdullah of Jordan read the second in that series. He happens to be a named character in the series.
Oh, no kidding.
An advisor read it, gave it to him, and he said, "You have to read this, Your Majesty." He said, "Why?" He said, "Because you're in it." And he looked at it, and he said, "What are you talking about? It's a novel." He goes, "I know, but you're a character." And in 2 days, he read the novel, which was about ISIS trying to kill him and overthrow Jordan and take it over for the Islamic State. And rather than banning me from the kingdom forever, he invited my wife and me to come and spend 5 days with him and talk about these issues. It was extraordinary. Well, I've been doing the threat of radical Islamism for so long, it remains a huge threat. But there are other places where evil is rising in this world. And so the new novel, The Kremlin Conspiracy, a March 6th release, is really about a what-if scenario that's a worst-case scenario. What if a czar rises to power in Moscow? Now,
This would not be literally a czar in the lineage of
Not necessarily
of
in the lineage, but the idea
leader.
Being not a communist leader, not a Soviet leader or even a post-Soviet leader, but somebody who thinks like a czar, who wants to restore the monarchy, may or may not have direct, you know, credentials, but he takes control. And what do you want? What made the monarchs, the czars. My family were Russian Orthodox Jews that escaped under Tsar Nicholas II when he was fomenting the pogroms, a horrible persecution against the Jewish people. So we were fortunate. We got out. But, of course, millions of Jews did not until after the Soviet Union collapsed. But the point was, they were imperialists. They believed in the building the glory of Mother Russia. They not 11 time zones wasn't enough for them. They wanted to expand their territory, and they kept gobbling up much of Europe and Asia and so forth, the Middle East. So what if a czar emerges who thinks this way? And what if, while an American president and administration is focused on North Korea and Iran, serious threats though those are, what if he decides to grab Estonia or Latvia or Lithuania or all three? Now, those are NATO allies since 2004, right? The Baltic states are. Which means to do so would be to trigger Article 5, the Mutual Defense Pact. But the gamble in this fictional leader in the Kremlin is, the gamble is, what if I go grab those in 96 hours, just one of them, or two of them, or three of them? Is the United States of America, is the President of the United States, are the guys in Brussels, are they really going to go to war for Tallinn, for Vilnius, places that most Americans cannot even find on a map?
Right.
Are we really going to go to war? And if we go to war, what if we go to nuclear war? Are we willing to risk that? The gamble that the scenario that's building in the book is, he thinks no. In fact, he thinks, if I do this, nobody's going to do anything. They didn't do anything when I went into Georgia. They didn't do anything when I took Crimea. Now, it's a fictional character. He's not Putin, but he's Putin-esque. And I had to build some of that context. They didn't do anything when I took the Donbass region in Eastern Europe. They're not doing anything when I helped Assad massacre hundreds of thousands in Syria. So I think I'm in the clear on this. And if I win, if I grab it and hold it and nobody comes to stop me, that's the end of NATO as we know it.
Right.
Which means Moscow is the superpower on the planet, and everybody's quaking in fear. That's the premise of the Kremlin conspiracy.
Fascinating. And unfortunately, as is often the case, all too possible a scenario, which is why the value of your books is so great.
Well, fiction has a funny way of shifting around the policy debate and getting into the popular culture.
Right.
Ultimately, everybody in Washington might think something or not think something, but if the country doesn't know, care, if no Paul Revere is sort of riding through saying, hey, the Redcoats are coming, in this case, possibly, not British, but red, then the culture doesn't understand what the threat is. And it took a while. 9/11 was the convergence point, but it took, you and I have been talking about radical Islamism as long as I've known you, and that's got to be 20 plus years, maybe 25.
I think so.
And it took 9/11, but even then, it's taken a long time to understand the threat more broadly than just Al-Qaeda, than just in a cave in Afghanistan. The threat inside the country, the threat to Europe, and so forth. But now there are other threats, and Putin has been pretty cagey. And I would say that he bluffed President George W. Bush. Now, we needed him in a sense during that 9/11 crisis, so I'm not criticizing President Bush, but I haven't looked into Putin's eyes, but I'm not seeing something that I would feel comfortable about, right?
Yeah.
But so I think that was a miscalculation, but I understand why President George W. Bush did it, and I'm not faulting him for it. The reset under Obama and Clinton, that was a disaster. At that point, we knew. That point, we knew what he was up to.
Right.
Now we have a new president who's new, and his statements in the campaign were not good, but his policies and his personnel have been fantastic so far. With one exception, he really sent a message of questioning the value of Article 5 and the Mutual Defense Pact of NATO throughout the, not only through the campaign, but even well into the first year of the administration. Now, he's changed on that. That's good. But that has left a lingering question in the minds of the NATO allies, particularly the Baltic states, who are coming for a summit with him, and this is good, April 3rd to Washington. That's good.
Timing for the book.
Yeah, well, it is, actually. It turns out I didn't know, but Vice President Pence went
to
spend time there.
I'd like to think this is no conspiracy, but it's certainly going to work.
Well, here's the other thing about Putin. And he's got this election coming up. I don't know what the term is. I haven't come up with the fake news term, fake elections. But why March 18th? It wasn't actually the legal date. They changed the date. Why? Because that's the that's the anniversary of 3 years since they annexed, illegally, Crimea.
Really? Joe Rosenberg, we have to pause for just a second.
Sure.
You've put so much on the table. We're here at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. That's why the background noise. Visiting with Joel Rosenberg, a best-selling author many times over, the founder of the Joshua
Fund.
This program in a day. We'll be right back with more with Joel Rosenberg.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're visiting with Joel Rosenberg, the author most recently of a brand new book. In fact, it's not even really out just yet.
March 6th.
We're flogging it. It will be out momentarily. You can certainly pre-order it at Amazon. It is entitled The Kremlin Conspiracy. We've just been talking with Joel about the plot and what he's trying to teach us about the dangers of a future Russian czar. I wanted to pivot with you, Joel, for a couple of different reasons, to some of the behavior of the Kremlin in the past, specifically the repression of Jews that it engaged in. We're here in part as members of a wonderful new coalition to save the persecuted Christians. And it's a campaign that's very deliberately modeled after a man you previously worked for, and some of his admirers and his wife at the time, his friends, who came together in this country to try to help save Soviet Jews like Natan Sharansky. And they did so with a campaign that was built around, initially at least, putting up simply signs outside of synagogues to call attention to the plight of these Jews. Talk a little bit about the threat as you see it now from the Sharia supremacists, the way I think of it, radical Islam as you call it, from the communists in China, the gulagists in North Korea, and even the Russians as well,
right,
to these persecuted Christians in our time.
One of the themes in my writing, Frank, both, you know, in particularly in writing political thrillers, novels that are worst-case scenarios, again, trying to drive these ideas into the popular culture, because there's plenty of people doing it in the policy world, yourself included. But one of the central themes is to misunderstand the nature and threat of evil is to risk being blindsided by it. The United States was blindsided by Pearl Harbor, December 7, 1941, because we didn't understand the threat that the Imperial Japanese posed. We didn't understand who they were, what they wanted, or how far they'd go to get it. We were blindsided on August 2nd, 1990, when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, though we should not have been.
Yeah.
I'm not saying everyone was. I don't remember you being, but anyway, many were. And of course, we were blindsided on 9/11. We just didn't understand, but it was understandable. And what we're looking at now is the worst era of persecution of Christians in the history of mankind.
It is saying something to describe this era. The last 100 years, we're told, more Christians have been murdered or otherwise brutally oppressed than in the entire history of Christianity since Christ walked the earth.
That's right.
And this is a
stunning. So there's no excuse to think what we're being blindsided by something. This is something that's been happening for a century, but it's easy to just get focused on your own world. You got enough troubles, and people do have a lot of troubles. So for me, as the grandson of Orthodox Jews that escaped out of the Tsarist persecution of the Jews in the 1900s, early 1900s, escaped, got to America, and like any good Jewish family, we set up shop in Brooklyn. That's what you do. So my heart goes out to persecuted Jews and all growing up, because we were. But we got to America, and this is where we found freedom. We found freedom. We found political freedom. We found economic freedom. We found spiritual freedom. So this is how my father, mother, and I and my family came to faith in Jesus as Messiah. So now I'm an evangelical Jew with a dual U.S.-Israeli citizenship. I live in Israel. That means I get to vote twice. So my heart is very much with the persecution of the Jewish people worldwide, historically, but currently. And then, of course, with the Christians. And I would add into that Muslims who have been killed by ISIS and others in larger numbers than in recent years than Christians or Jews. But when I think of Christians, you know, this is a theological issue for me in part because Jesus told us it would happen. But just because he said it was going to happen and get worse before he comes back didn't mean we're supposed to go, oh, well, okay. No, he's told us to show compassion, to care for our brothers and sisters if they were in prison, if they were naked, if they were bleeding, if they were suffering in any way. Show them love.
And, he actually said this is your obligation.
Absolutely. These were commands.
Right.
These were commands. And we're supposed to love a neighbor. We're commanded to love our enemies. We're certainly supposed to love our brothers and sisters. And so silence is not loving. Inaction is not loving. In a sense, though, it's not winning. It's helping. It's aiding and abetting the enemy if we don't come and stand with our brothers and sisters. So I am fully with you all as you build this new campaign and get the word out. People should be just taking baby steps of action. We're not asking somebody to halo jump out of, a C-130 into enemy territory to rescue Jews. Somebody should.
Some people are. Of our coalition,
as this novel series, by the way, this new novel series with the Kremlin conspiracy, it's a former U.S. Secret Service agent who's a believer. His faith hasn't been like on his sleeve, but he's definitely a Christian, and now he's out of the Secret Service because of some sad, tragic things that happened in his family's life. But he finds himself in Moscow in the middle of a terrible crisis. And as the series is going to unfold with this character, Marcus Riker, he's got the skill set, he's got the faith, and he's going to find himself in need, needed, in a lot of different situations. This is going to allow me to take my readers into different worlds. It could be the Boko Haram world. It could be the gulags of North Korea. All kinds of situations that a thriller can keep you up all night, not asking, when is this class over, but how does this story end? That you can hook people, and I basically feel like if I can do that in fiction, keep them up to 5 or 6 in the morning where they're cursing me on Twitter or Facebook because they were just going to read one more chapter, just one more chapter, and now they've got to get up for work and they have not slept. Now I'm emotionally connecting with them with issues. It is policy, it is history, it is current, and it is future. But it's not dry. It electrifies them at multiple levels and possibly engages them to action. And that's, I'm an activist at heart. A failed political consultant, admittedly, turned political thriller
you made
writer.
You made it just the well, same as they would knew, say in
right?
Brooklyn. Look, the beauty of this really is, Joel, that you have a gift for keeping people turning those pages and staying up and not only missing the sleep that they needed for work, but getting aboard a message that they need to be thinking about. And I'm so convinced, and one of the reasons we do this show is to try to help people think through what they need to know and do as informed members of the electorate. Because if the public doesn't understand what we're up against, they're not going to make informed and sensible decisions.
I agree with that. And I'm encouraged that at the moment we do have an administration that, and I would say a president and even particularly a vice president who's deeply passionate about this. I was just with him. He was speaking to a small luncheon here at NRB yesterday. And I one of the things that touched me and I tweeted it out was that it's very rare that you have a president who doesn't speak to the evangelical community but is part of us. He gets this. He got this before he went into politics. And God has raised up Mike Pence to come alongside an unlikely president.
I couldn't agree more. And one of the things that's so heartening about the present moment, as you say, with Mike Pence, the vice presidency, and the president as well, is that unlike what was the problem for the Soviet Jews at the time that this campaign's predecessor was mounted, which was that the administration, first of Richard Nixon and then of Henry Kissinger's, number two president, Gerald Ford, they didn't want any part of pressing the Soviets or the Kremlin. So we've got a presidency with whom I think we can work to try to save persecuted Christians. And Joel, your work in this regard is incredibly important, as is that of Natan Sharansky and so many others who are coming together.
Well, he was a hero, and I loved
the persecuted Christian campaign, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Frank.
We have to let you go for the time being.
Great to be with you.
Congratulations on the Kremlin conspiracy, folks. Check it out. at Amazon immediately. More straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It is a delight to have with us here at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention a friend of many years, a man I've admired greatly for his courage and his determination to bring to light the plight of the voiceless. In fact, that's the name of one of his movies. He is Jason Jones. He has contributed mightily, I would say, through the film medium to our understanding of a number of problems, whether it's abortion, whether it's the murderous tendencies of Sharia supremacists, whether it is the indifference of people in the West to the plight of Christians being persecuted in our own time and in the past. An amazing man of many gifts who has been involved in human rights education and relief organizations for years. He is also the founder of Movie to Movement, and I'll ask him to say a little bit about it.
It's great to be on your show. I'm flattered. I'm going to put all of that on the back of my next book.
There you go. How about it? It's good to have you with us.
Thanks for
having
me.
So what brings you to the NRB?
Well, I'm here to promote a new film. It's called I Lived on Parker Avenue. It's this beautiful film produced and directed by a team of young guys from Louisiana. And I said, you guys need to be at NRB, and I'll walk you through the process because the world needs to see this film. And it's coming out on a digital release on March 8th.
And they can find that at ilivedonparkeravenue.com?
ilivedonparkerav.com.
Av.com, yeah. Got it. Just quickly, the plot line?
It's a young man who's in law school at LSU who wants to find his birth mother. And in this adventure to find his birth mother and father, he discovers that she was actually in an abortion clinic and at the last minute decided to leave. But it's just a beautiful story of love and forgiveness. And there was nothing to forgive, as he says, but the mother the whole time felt as if she needed to be forgiven. And the celebration of adoption, it's one of the most beautiful, it's so artistic, it's one of the most beautiful short films I've ever seen.
Terrific. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
One of the other things I just wanted to mention is that you have brought your skills to bear on behalf of a campaign that we're involved with as well, the Save the Persecuted Christians campaign. One of the films that you've made available to people who want to participate in this by getting a banner in front of their church is a short film also called Sing a Little Louder. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Sing a Little Louder, which you can watch on YouTube. I think, and as a producer I can say this because I'm not the director, I'm not the director of photography, I'm not the writer. It's the most beautiful short film I've ever seen. It's startling. And it tells the story of a train that broke down on its way to Sachsenhausen in front of a Lutheran church.
True story.
And the unfortunate way in which that congregation responded.
But it wasn't just any old train.
It wasn't just any old train. Unfortunately, it was filled with Jews on their way to a concentration camp. And we made this film to inspire the church to speak up against the persecuted in Iraq and Syria. And unfortunately, just like in the 40s, today, we sing louder. We sing in a different way. We watch Netflix. Something uncomfortable comes on radio. We hit the dial or we're watching television. We turn off the news. And so news organizations have learned not to cover these things. Filmmakers have learned not to make films on these subjects. But at Movie to Movement, our mission is to use the power of film to inspire solidarity with the vulnerable.
Yeah. And really to give voice.
To give voice to the voiceless.
And tell us a little bit about how you've made these movies, Jason, because I know you're not a big Hollywood studio by any means.
No.
These are all independent films.
All independent films.
And you've really done it the old-fashioned way, as best I can tell.
Just the way I say it is I low crawl across America looking for money. You know, we get an idea for a film that needs to be made, and then we just put our head down and fight to get it made. My background is in human rights work and political campaign management, but I discovered that radio, and I started in radio and television and film, this is how we reach millions and millions and millions of people. So I say I'm a human rights activist. My wife says, don't ever say that again. That's not how you feed us. You know, you're a filmmaker. But I look at all of my films have one thing in common, and they promote the incomparable dignity of the human person. And I hope you leave the theater inspired to live a life in solidarity with the vulnerable, which is the most beautiful way to live your life. And you do that, and you've been doing that with discipline and fortitude for decades, and it's a hard, well, people don't understand. There's a lot of folks that do this, I call them tourists. They show up, they make a lot of noise, they act like they own the place, and they leave. And they leave because it's hard, and I don't blame people for leaving these battles.
Talk for a moment, if you would, about a film that I know you had a hand in, too, that I really considered an incredible example of what you just talked about. Very hard to watch, and yet extraordinarily important for people to take aboard, and that was The Stoning of Soraya.
Well, the story, it's a true story about a woman, Soraya, who was framed for adultery because her husband was poor, but he wanted to marry a younger woman from a wealthy family, so he framed her for adultery right after the revolution in Iran. And her aunt, by an Iranian-French journalist's car breaks down as he's fleeing the country. And this aunt, you know, says, you have to listen to my story. Take my voice with you, is what she told this French journalist. It became an international bestseller, but, you know, really not that well read. Then our mutual friend Cyrus, a director, wanted to make this film.
An Iranian expat himself.
Powerful man, a beautiful man, great filmmaker. And so he went with Steve McAvity, the producer of Braveheart and The Passion of the Christ, together made this film. I came on as an associate producer. Of all the projects I've ever worked on, that was just a tremendous privilege, especially because of the sort of serendipity that the Green Revolution broke out within weeks of our film coming out, which had been bootlegged and heavily distributed in Iran and Iraq. But for me as a filmmaker, and I got involved in the work that I have because as a young father, I lost a child to violence. And as a young infantryman, I got to witness sorrow and suffering around the world and understand how privileged I am. And those two events is what pushed me into this work to protect the vulnerable. And so to be a part of a film that was seen around the world, that was runner-up at Toronto, that won the LA Film Festival, that won the NAACP Image Award for Best Foreign Film, I felt like I was being that aunt's voice. No one was more helpless in the world than Soraya and her aunt, played by the wonderful and courageous Iranian actress, Shreya Ashalu, whose family suffered, who she suffered because of her courage standing up against Iran. To be her voice across decades on the other side of the world, and then that young woman who was Nida, was shot through the head by Iranian forces in a peaceful protest, and her name meant voice. And so we were the voice, we became the voice for Nida, our little film, and we became the voice for Soraya.
I just wanted to say, in terms of what we're about today,
yes,
trying to have a coalition that gives voice to these voiceless around the world, could you just, in the shortest of short form, talk about the importance, as you see it, of complementing the work of the people who are human rights activists, who are on the ground trying to facilitate and, you know, uplift the seriously oppressed, by bringing to bear this larger effort?
Oh, now, if you're listening to this, you are singing louder. You are singing to distract yourself from the calls for help, from people who are helpless. They're not weak. These are not weak people. The Chaldeans, the Assyrians, the Yazidis are strong people. They're vulnerable. They're placed in impossible situations. You throw an Olympic swimmer in the middle of the ocean, he's going to drown. You put me in a bathtub, I'm okay. You know, I was helpless as a young father to protect my child from violence. I look at this is my duty. This is my obligation. This is not a choice. So if you're listening, you're a leader. You're listening to Frank Gaffney's radio show. If you're listening, you need to go to this website and you need to get this sign in front of your choice in your church. What I love about when ISIS wrote this on the door, and forgive me for saying it as blunt as I did, I said, thanks be to God. This is a good symbol. This is a branded symbol. This is like the Nike swish. This is something we can use, thank you, ISIS, to wake the world up. And the world didn't wake up. You know, we stopped saying never again. We never say never again anymore.
This is our moment. Jason Jones, thank you.
No, thank you,
Frank. The leadership that you exhibit, your help with this Save the Persecuted Christians campaign is really appreciated. I want to just commend to our listeners, SaveThePersecutedChristians.org is where you can find out more about this campaign, how you can help, and also see Sing a Little Louder by Jason Jones. Thank you, my friend.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're continuing our conversations with extraordinary people that I'm meeting or reconnecting with here at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville, Tennessee. One of our colleagues in the Save the Persecuted Christians Coalition is Faith McDonald, a woman who has been a remarkable leader on the whole issue of persecution of the Christians in her role as, I believe, the Director of Religious Liberty at the Institute for Religion and Democracy. She has, and it's a real blessing, introduced me to our next guest, who we just happen to be sitting beside here at the convention. His name is William Levy. He is the founder and the driving force, the overseer, as he puts it, of Operation Nehemiah Missions in South Sudan. And it's a delight to meet him, and I'm very keen to hear about the Operation Nehemiah Missions and how you came to this ministry, William. So welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's a great pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me on your program. First and foremost, I want to say from Romans 1:16, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Yeshua, of Jesus Christ, for it's the power of God's salvation to everyone who believe, first to the Jews and the Gentiles. So I was born and raised in a Messianic Jewish home in Sudan. When we speak of Sudan now, there are two Sudan. There is Islamic Republic of Sudan, and there is Christian South Sudan. I grew up in South Sudan, and that country...
But during the period when it was under the oppression of the North.
Exactly. And we got our independence in 1956 from England, and therefore, after that, a civil war erupted between the North and the South. The goal of that war, from the Islamic perspective, is to control the Nile Valley with Islam and Jihad, and basically eradicate the presence of the church from the entire Nile Valley. And so I can go as far as the second or the third century or the seventh century Muhammadians rise that eradicated the church in the Nile Valley, the Nubian Christian kingdom, then going back to the Ethiopian eunuch and things like that. So Christianity has a long root in Sudan. People don't know that.
I'm sure they are even less aware that there are Messianic Jews in Sudan. That must be a story unto itself. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. And a lot of people are surprised to say, when I say I'm a Messianic Jew, I believe in Jesus Christ, in Yeshua, the Messiah. People say, how come? And so forth. Remember, the Jewish people's life are tied to Africa. Israel is really linked to the continent through the Sinai Peninsula, Egypt, and all the patriarchs pass through that. So we are Levites, and we came from the Levitical roots, I believe, from the children of
Levi. One of the 12 tribes?
Yes, and Levi is one of the 12 tribes, and the Levitical priesthood is delegated to that family. And so our people came into the Nile Valley to ancient Ethiopia, which is the current Sudan, before the Islamic conquest. So people think that Ethiopia is the current Ethiopia, but the real Ethiopia, where the Ethiopian eunuch came from, is Sudan.
Interesting.
So, but anyway, going no further into the history of that, which we can explore, but I want to say that in 1956, while the North already succumbed to Islam, where Christianity already being destroyed, so the South is the only stronghold where the church was and it remained to be, but they wanted to conquer it for Islam.
Yeah. And so the Civil War broke out to try to protect the Christian population and traditions of South.
Exactly. I was born in the middle of that war in the mid-60s, and my parents took us to Uganda on refuge. So we spent some time there, over 10 years, and there I came to the Lord, Yeshua, as my Lord and Savior, through the teaching of my parents from Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 6, 4 to 9, train a child the way they should grow, teach them when they sit down, when they walk up, so that when they grow up, they will depart from this. So that's the gospel I received. 1977, I came to the Lord. I took him as my Lord and Savior, and I had a relationship with Jesus Christ, because I know it's not enough to be a believer in Yeshua just because your parents are Christian. It's you have to own him for yourself.
So let me ask you, and our guest again is William Levy. He is the founder and overseer of Operation Nehemiah Missions in South Sudan. What is the mission of your Operation Nehemiah as it relates in particular to trying to protect the people of the Christian faith in that part of the world?
The name Operation Nehemiah Missions is taken out of the Bible, from the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah was the rebuilder of the Jerusalem wall. And in 1993, after I came here to America in 88, the Lord called, I got an engineering degree. I was like, okay, I left the country, everything's okay, and I will do my life. But the Lord said, no, I want you to go and rebuild the country. Now, at that time, 1993, South Sudan lie in ruin, in utter destruction. The family were broken. My father was killed in 1987. My mother ran to Uganda refugee camp, all my siblings there. So the Lord say, I'm sending you back to be the voice for them and for the people. So you can look to the U.S. or to the U.N. You are it. You need to do something about this. So I cry, I mourn, I pray, and thank God the Lord opened my eyes, and I started this ministry called Operation Nehemiah Mission. What is mission? What is the vision? Now, a country of South Sudan was broken completely, and the family is broken. Several layers of generation live in refugee camp. UN has a grip on this community. The family is broken. The church is broken. Everything. So I realized.
And the UN is not playing the supportive role that one would hope it would play.
No. They are social engineering everything. They're breaking up the family, the church. They want everybody to depend on hands up.
And do you find that they are under the influence of the North, the Islamic Organization of Islamic Cooperation, they call it, is very powerful in the United Nations. Is that at work there as well?
Absolutely. They're basically playing the card for Islamic government to the North. And they are basically perpetrator of Islamization. That's clearly the UN has done more damage to South Sudan just as Islamic government.
Now, there is a civil war going on inside South Sudan. Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening?
Well, I just wanted to back up. What's the mission? We are rebuilding the church and the family from this crisis. How do you rebuild a country from nothing? You need to start with the foundation. You need to start with the family. You need to restore the marriages. You disciple the young generation to love Christ, love the Yeshua, to love their family. Husband will love their wife. Children will respect their parents. And then people to work with their own hands, plug them out of that slavery to something that they can embrace. That is what we're doing through Operation Emer, rebuilding the wall of the family, the church. And that is why we are doing what we're doing.
And how are you able to do that in the midst of a civil war now?
Well, the civil war...
As well as the Islamists.
Yeah, the civil war find us in the midst of that. So we have been thriving through the crisis in the midst of all this persecution. We are from Islam to South Sudan in conflict with herself. We felt like, you know, the church cannot run away. We got to stand our ground. We have to fight the good fight.
This is the calling to save the persecuted church and Christians around the world, as well as, of course, where you are in South Sudan.
Yeah.
William Levy, thank you so much for the work you're doing, and I hope people will check it out at Operation Nehemiah Missions. The website is operationsnehemiah.org. Thank you for your time, sir, as well as for the service that you're rendering to the people of our world, the most oppressed amongst us.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.